Hello and welcome to another episode of the Deep State Fake News Family Podcast. One of the interesting things right now, if you are paying attention to the news, is that there really isn't any. If you go to the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post, there really aren't any headlines. And we're just kind of in this lull period right now, where the whole Never Trump movement has kind of burned itself out. I mean, it took 2 years or so, but it's gotten to the point where post-Mueller report, I mean, they tried for a second to find a new enemy scapegoat in Barr, and the New York Times does have a headline out today attacking Barr. People are trying to figure out William Barr. He's busy stockpiling power. But yeah, basically, it's just a very quiet time right now because the campaign to have this character assassination of Donald Trump has mostly crashed and burned, no longer exists, and there really isn't a new story yet, especially because, you know, everything else is actually going relatively well. The economy is doing very well. Unemployment rate so low. Trump just had a very good trip to Europe. Looked extremely presidential, 75th anniversary of D-Day. Even seems to have gotten along relatively well with Macron. And so there aren't any obvious negatives to report right now. And of course, they're not going to cover the positives. So there just really isn't any news. And now, and there's this vacuum. And this vacuum is all the more glaring because you do have all of these Democratic presidential candidates. So you would think there would be a story there. They tried to find a story in Beto O'Rourke or Robert Francis O'Rourke. You know, a ridiculous Vanity Fair cover, but that didn't go anywhere because not a whole lot of substance underneath the pretty boy skater image, unfortunately. Then they thought, okay, there's a slightly less pretty but more identity politics attractive and more intelligent alternative, Pete Buttigieg. And, you know, there's a little bit there. There's something to that. He has a little bit more substance than O'Rourke. But, I mean, come on. The mayor of wherever, Gary, Indiana. South Bend, wherever he's the mayor of. Does it really matter? Mayor? Come on. Indiana. So that's not really viable. And then they're kind of embarrassed about the fact, and this is the funny thing, that the media, they want to set the narrative, and they don't like it when the baseline reality butts up against the narrative that they would like to construct. And in this case, I'm talking about Joe Biden. So they don't want, and they're slightly embarrassed about the fact that at the end of the day, a septuagenarian straight white man who looks a little bit like a walking corpse at this point, if we're being honest, is the front runner. But look, you can't change the baseline reality. You can't change the fact that when you take polls of American people, they put him up in the whatever 25 percentile leading the pack. So you can't have these, you know, you can't fill the void with Biden. It's just kind of a sleepy period right now, because really the only story is and continues to be some of the successes that Donald Trump is having, and there's no way in hell they're going to cover that. But I want to get back to the Democratic candidates a little bit at the end of this episode. Much of the content of this episode will be discussing international geopolitics. So hopefully for those of you who are interested in the Game of Thrones of real life, this will prove interesting and at times informative. The most relevant story happening in that regard right now, just because of its provocative nature, is the near-miss encounter in the East Philippine Sea, let's just say East China Sea, between a Russian destroyer and a U.S. naval vessel. They got pretty close to one another, and both sides accusing each other of causing the incident. This comes against the backdrop of Xi Jinping visiting Vladimir Putin in Moscow. And during that visit, it was a very cozy visit. President Xi said that amongst his foreign colleagues, President Vladimir Putin is his closest and most intimate friend. I deeply value my friendship with him. And Vladimir Putin had a couple of bromides against the United States, trying to maintain its hegemony with its manipulation and control of the financial system. Basically, you know, showing vocal solidarity with China in the U.S. China trade dispute, and so it was the next day that this near collision happened, and so, you know, that could be just a nice little gesture by Vladimir, you know, to try to follow up his words with a minor action of brushing off the U.S. naval vessel in China's near waters. That's probably what that is. It's all for show, for the most part. I mean, Russia and China, if they were really going to align themselves against the United States, they would have done it already. Many of you will be aware of the fact that Russia and China share a deep, a fundamental sort of uneasiness with each other. And that dates back a long time. Soviet Union, Mao days, Russia treated China very poorly, as kind of the diminutive little brother, and China hasn't forgotten that. And today, if they were to form any kind of partnership, of course the roles would be reversed, and Russia would be the little to China's big, and that's not something that Russia can abide either. So they use each other to try to gain some leverage against the United States, but at a fundamental level, they don't really mean it, and neither would ever trust the other enough, nor would either ever want to subordinate itself to the other to form any kind of meaningful alliance with the other against the United States. Both have their own battles with the United States, and both try to enlist the other as some bit of leverage in that regard. So that's that. Related to that a little bit, an interesting case. Turkey is sort of a weird case. The United States is canceling its F-35 fighter jet program to Turkey as a result of Turkey utilizing the Russian defense industry or enlisting the Russian defense industry. It's such an odd case because Turkey is a NATO member, but Turkey does not, whether it's in Iraq or Syria, or its closeness with Russia, it really doesn't do the NATO alliance and the United States any favors. It's just a very odd case, and really probably should not be in NATO. There other news involves the U.S.-Mexico trade deal slash decision to not pursue tariffs, and just getting into the whole tariff thing, it is interesting the way in which Trump is using the tariffs as a cudgel in the international trading arena. You have to use the tools that you have available to you. And again, the simple fact is that the trade balances got way out of whack over multiple U.S. administrations. And Trump's approach to say to the other countries, I don't blame you, China. I don't blame you, Europe, for taking advantage of the United States for decades. You know, it's a failure of American leadership, but it can't continue anymore. That's absolutely the right approach. And if he has to try to impose some short-term pain to address that imbalance, he's going to do it. And, you know, and so that feeds into the, again, the U.S.-China trade dispute. Apparently, Trump and Xi, President Xi, are likely to meet at the G20 at the end of this month, June, in Osaka, Japan, where the G20 is taking place. You know, the United States has all the leverage in that ongoing dispute, and Trump is right to not sign a deal, sign a trade agreement until the United States gets what it wants, gets what it feels like is a fair deal. Because the balance becomes so far out of whack that it's really about China meeting us much more than it is about us meeting them. And, you know, is it worth it to drag them kicking and screaming to a point that actually makes sense and is sustainable for years and years going forward? It wouldn't make any sense to sign a marginal deal where some of these fundamental imbalances continue to exist. You know, it would be just hurt us in the, you know, 3 to 5 years from now, even if you might have a little bit of a short-term bounce in the stock markets, etc. And then skipping forward back or coming full circle to the Democratic candidates, it's really a real lack of riches, isn't it? You know, I think most disappointing, honestly, is Bernie Sanders. I mean, he's just basically bringing out his old greatest hits from the campaign 4 years ago. I haven't heard him say anything new. He talks in that, I mean, it sounds dated now, his political speech about, you know, corporations must pay their fair share, blah, 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 the 1%. I mean, come on, 4 years have gone by. Come up with a new line, come up with a little bit of a new cadence, give us something. At least Elizabeth Warren. And I would keep an eye on Elizabeth Warren. At least she has come up with some real policy proposals. Most interestingly, of course, the plan to cancel student debt. It's a fantastic plan. I think every candidate, I think Trump should look at this too. Look at canceling student debt, not just as righting sort of a moral wrong that has been perpetrated on the American people, but also as an economic stimulus. You know, it's an economic stimulus. You cancel the debt, and all the money that you spend canceling the debt, you might get back in the form of increased spending, increased revenue, increased taxation through the increased spending that will happen when you unburden the millennial generation, who are now getting into their 30s, really prime home buying, earning age. Unburden them, and you will see an economic stimulus, and that may very well even make up for the amount that you would incur canceling the debt. And so props to Elizabeth Warren for at least coming out with that. I would sort of, you know, I would bet on Elizabeth Warren right now. Not, it wouldn't be a confident bet, but, you know, at least she's younger-ish, a female, good for the Democratic Party. You know, relatively intelligent. Needs to become a little bit more comfortable with her personality, but at least she has one. She clearly has a, you know, sort of definitive personality, and her authentic self and her political self don't seem to be too misaligned. And that's obviously such an important factor, because Trump is the gold standard when it comes to presenting himself authentically, and that's a big reason why the American public voted for him. So, in any case, that concludes this week's episode. Feel free to follow us. Please follow us at State Fake on Twitter, other social media to come up